This is the audio version of the Bottom Dollars discussion guide. On the cover, we have the Bottom Dollars logo, which is the text Bottom Dollars, with a dollar bill pattern overlaid onto the word dollars. Below that, the text discussion guide. On page one is a photo of a time clock with punch cards next to it. Beneath that is a box with text in it that reads, www.bottomdollarsmovie.com. On the right column, it reads, Bottom Dollars, a Rooted in Rights original documentary. Bottom Dollars is an hour-long documentary that exposes the segregated workplaces and low wages often paid to people with disabilities. Through personal stories and expert interviews, the film presents a vision for better alternatives that promote community inclusion, equal opportunity, and fair wages. Rooted in Rights is a creative content production project of Disability Rights Washington, the protection and advocacy system for Washington State. Based in Seattle, Rooted in Rights produces videos, social media campaigns, and multimedia projects that advance advocacy on behalf of people with disabilities worldwide. On the next page is a behind-the-scenes photo. A young woman sits on a subway car, wearing a winter hat. In the foreground is a professional camera with the woman's image on the LCD view screen, as if you're seeing it from the perspective of the filmmaker. Text reads, Chapter Guide. Chapter 1, quote, Excellent Worker, end quote. The history of sheltered workshops and the subminimum wage. Chapter 2, quote, Even When You Hustle, end quote. How productivity tests determine the subminimum wage. Chapter 3, quote, Pennies per hour, end quote. Stories and examples of extremely low wages. Chapter 4, quote, Been down there too long, end quote. School transition plans often direct students to sheltered work. Chapter 5, quote, My mother didn't think I could do it, end quote. Proper supports, like job coaches, can open up opportunities. Chapter 6, quote, Yes, there were a lot, end quote. Creating a person-centered plan that helps identify potential jobs. Chapter 7, quote, The Joe Hawk, end quote. Creating customized employment options to fit a person's strengths. Chapter 8, quote, I've got the jersey to prove it, end quote. People with disabilities have skills and talents that employers need. Chapter 9, quote, The Chance to Rise, end quote. We have the power to change policies to create equal opportunity for people with disabilities. On the next page is a half-page spread of President Roosevelt sitting in his wheelchair next to a young girl, with his dog on his lap. In a text box below that, it reads a quote. The FLSA, the Fair Labor Standards Act, is the most far-sighted program for the benefit of workers that has ever been adopted, end quote, President Franklin D. Roosevelt. On the right column is large text that reads Fair Labor Standards Act, with the year 1938 in small text above it. Below it reads, As part of the government response to the Great Depression, the Fair Labor Standards Act, FLSA, established for the first time a minimum wage. The FLSA was signed into law by President Franklin Roosevelt in 1938. The first federal minimum wage was 25 cents per hour, equivalent to about $4.19 today. In 2016, the federal minimum wage is $7.25 per hour, and some states have established a higher wage. On the next page is a large photo of a man in his wheelchair smiling. In a text box below him, it reads, quote, When I saw my first paycheck, I said, I quit. I can go find me something else to do. End quote. That's Lauren Jackson from Jackson, Mississippi. On the right column is large text that reads 14 and then parentheses C, as in a law, 14C. Above it is small text that reads FLSA. Though revolutionary at the time, the FLSA doesn't protect all workers. Section 14C establishes a special minimum wage for individuals, quote, whose earning or productive capacity is impaired by age, physical or mental deficiency, or injury, end quote. If employers file for a 14C certificate from the U.S. Department of Labor, they can pay people with disabilities less than minimum wage. On the next page is a large photo of a middle-aged woman sitting on her couch. She knits a pattern. Below in a text box it reads, quote, I was only making about $3 an hour, they figured out. I feel that I should be paid as an equal person, end quote. Pamela Stewart, Tiffin, Ohio. On the right column is large text that reads sub-minimum wage. Then below that, 14C lays out a productivity test that determines the subminimum wage. The employer times three employees without disabilities doing a certain task. They then time an employee with a disability doing the same task. If the employee with a disability completes only a fraction of the work as compared to their coworkers, they are paid a fraction of the wage. The Department of Labor does not do consistent on-site inspections to ensure this test is fair. On the next page is a large photo of a record from a 14C certificate. It lists at the top average earnings per hours and then a long list of different wages, starting at 30 cents, going up to 33 cents, then to 45 cents. Picture is mostly blurry and used as a background. In the foreground, in large text, it reads, 241,265 people with disabilities are paid less than the minimum wage. On the next page is a photo of a man who looks upwards and away from camera, almost like he's worried about something. A text box below him reads, Tillman worked in a sheltered workshop for 15 years before finally moving to a job in his community earning minimum wage. Tillman Mitchell, Vicksburg, Mississippi. In the right column is large text that reads, Sheltered Workshop, with smaller text reading, 1950s and 60s above it. Below, it reads, The use of the 14C certificates became widely used with the advent of sheltered workshops in the 1950s and 60s. The establishment of sheltered workshops coincided with the movement of people with disabilities out of segregated institutional settings. Originally, they were created largely by parents of people with disabilities to provide a safe place for their sons and daughters to go during the day. Over time, they developed into sophisticated nonprofit organizations that compete for contracts from government programs and private companies. These contracts are usually for manual labor tasks, such as assembling and sorting, shredding paper, or performing janitorial duties. We're on the next page now. The text continues. Contracts were intended as a way for people with disabilities to gain job skills in preparation for a job in the community. Instead, employers have an incentive to retain workers in the workshop to fulfill the contracts, sometimes for years, and to pay them sub-minimum wage. Section 14C does not establish a limit to how low the wages can go. In turn, workshops pay on average less than $2 an hour across the country. On the left is a large photo of a man holding his white cane, looking kind of sad or angry while standing in his neighborhood. In a text box next to him it reads, quote, I don't know how our bosses could sleep at night when they'd say, it's better than nothing. Charles Beeble, Baltimore, Maryland. On the next page is a picture of an older man looking up seated at the break room at Albertson's grocery store. In a text box beneath him, quote, Now I get 4 weeks vacation. I get paid for my vacation. Hugh Birdlin, Olympia, Washington. On the right column is text that reads, Transitioning to a new model of employment. Morningside Services in Olympia, Washington used to run a sheltered workshop and held a 14C certificate to pay sub-minimum wage. In 2004, they completed a 5-year phase-out of their sheltered workshop, and in 2014, they did not renew their 14C certificate. This ended the practice of paying sub-minimum wage at Morningside. They now place people in community jobs after months, not years, of training. Their story shows how existing workshops can transition away from segregated workplaces and low wages. On the next page on the right is a photo of a young woman wearing trousers and a polo shirt. She stands next to a cart with empty United States Postal Service bins on it. She smiles and looks up. In a text box, quote, If I didn't have access to those programs, I would just be sitting around doing nothing all day. Unquote. Sarah Frost, Southampton, New Hampshire. On the left column, there's text that reads, Shutting down the school-to-workshop pipeline. Although high schools are required to create transition plans for students with disabilities prior to graduation, not all schools and not all transition programs connect students with the same resources. Too often, a school system will view the local sheltered workshop as the best and/or easiest post-high school employment opportunity. The result is that students are funneled into the workshop system, delaying opportunities for real jobs or preventing them altogether. On the other hand, some students, like Sarah Frost, write, have access to a good transition program and internship opportunities immediately after high school. Sarah now works full-time at the Boston Children's Hospital in the shipping and receiving department. On the next page is a photo of a man smiling. He sits at his wheelchair, looking at a computer screen next to a conveyor belt. He is strapped into his chair. A towel rests on his shoulder along with a water tube. And then a text box. Quote, A lot of kids I went to school with went into sheltered workshops. I said no way for me. I started my job 5 days after school got out. End quote. Andy Owens, Portland, Oregon. On the next page, in the left column is large text that reads, Person-centered plan. And then beneath that, Focusing on the strengths and talents of an individual with a disability while acknowledging their challenges in a person-centered plan can match people to jobs suited to their abilities. Access to assistive technology expands possibilities. For example, Andy Owens, right, uses a loader and conveyor belt to process book orders using switches controlled by his head. On the next page is a large photo of a man wearing glasses and a Walmart uniform. He holds onto a row of carts he's pushing towards the store. There's another photo of him pushing carts while a woman watches him in the parking lot. In a text box, Dexter with his job coach, Teresa. Dexter Smith, Gallup, New Mexico. Large text reads, Supported Employment. In supported employment, a person is placed in a job and is given training to learn the job. Sometimes a job coach assists with this training by working on-site with an employee with a disability to help build skills and stay on task. Job coaches are also a resource for employers who have people with disabilities on staff. On the next page is a large photo of a man. He stands over an outdoor popcorn popper pouring salt onto the corn popping below. He has glasses, his hair is in a mohawk, and he wears a tie-dyed shirt. The text box beneath him reads, Joe became the sole proprietor of Pop and Joe's Kettle Corn in 2006. Joe Steffi, Lewisburg, Kansas. In large text on the right, customized employment. Creating a job that matches a person's skills and interests is the best option. Joe Steffi left, together with his family, founded Pop and Joe's Kettle Corn. The business provides Joe with various activities suited to his interests in doing many different parts of the business. His earnings allow him to forego public assistance, live where he wants to live, and choose his hobbies. None of this is remarkable. It's what everyone does when they work a job and choose how to spend their earnings. On the next page is a large photo of a young man smiling and looking into camera, and holds up his paycheck from Bob Boyd Honda. In a text box, quote, I may have a disability, but I can still work, end quote. Trust Jones, Brandon, Mississippi. Then text, when people with disabilities find a job, it's not just good for them, it's good for the employer. Trust Jones, right? Manages the Bob Boyd Honda Facebook and Twitter pages, a skill set that matched the dealership's need to reach out to potential customers. When employers commit to making their workplaces truly inclusive, they will benefit from the energy, talents, and skills of people with disabilities. Next page is a full-page photo of a young man sitting in his wheelchair. Quote, we have the power to make that change, end quote. Jensen Caraballo, Rochester, New York. On the last page are discussion questions. 1. In what ways are segregated workplaces harmful? 2. How can we ensure better access to transition programs for students with disabilities? 3. What can you do in your state to end the subminimum wage? 4. What can the federal government do to end segregation and low wages for people with disabilities in the workplace? 5. How could money be redirected from segregated workplaces to more inclusive programs? 6. What can employers do if they discover that they currently use the services of a sheltered workshop or employ individuals at subminimum wage? 7. How can employers recruit more employees with disabilities? 8. What can employers do to build a more inclusive and integrated work environment? 9. How can employers using supported employment be sure that they are not inadvertently furthering the exploitation of people with disabilities? 10. How can access to assistive technology open up job opportunities? 11. How can states begin the process of closing sheltered workshops and connecting their participants to other programs? 12. What can people with disabilities do if they want to challenge their wages? 13. What are some organizations that provide resources to people with disabilities seeking employment? And below is a fact. The subminimum wage is allowed in 48 states. And lastly, on the back cover, against the black background, just the text www.bottomdollarsmovie.com. The Rooted in Rights tree logo is on the bottom left, and on the bottom right it reads, Copyright 2006 Rooted in Rights. Rooted in Rights is a project of Disability Rights Washington.